If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLiveCast.com. Good evening, everybody. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we are here on Wrestling Night in America breaking down WWE TLC, which has just concluded on the WWE Network and various pay-per-view providers. Before we get to running down the card and getting to your phone calls, which, by the way, you can call us with your thoughts on the show, 515-605-9345. We'll be here taking those calls for the next 90 minutes or so. And you can also email us at wnialivecast@gmail.com, and we'll get to those emails during the show as well. But before we get to that, I do want to update you on the upcoming schedule with the holiday season right around the corner. The next 2 weeks, I will not be here on Wrestling Night in America. I will be traveling and visiting family during winter break. So there will be a show of some kind. There may be some guest hosts coming along to do some year-end reviews, but I'm expecting that Wrestling Night in America will air at its usual time at 8 p.m. Eastern on pwtorchlivecast.com for the next two Sundays, even though I will not be there to host them. Then on January 6th, we are back with a post-Impact Wrestling pay-per-view show. Impact Wrestling has Homecoming on January 6th, so it's possible, probable maybe even, that Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek, our usual Thursday night Impact recappers on the live cast, will be along as per the usual to break down Homecoming with you, the listeners and callers, on January 16th. So then my next show would be January 13th. So the schedule is looking like that for the next few weeks, but we'll worry about that when the time comes. Right now, we're going to talk TLC. And this was a much-needed thumbs-up show, I think, for WWE, which has had a lot of bad news recently pertaining specifically to the ratings of Raw and SmackDown. Not only that, but just the quality of shows, especially on Raw, that has really given the WWE name a bit of a hit lately. So this was a show that was positively received by a lot of people on my timeline on Twitter, and you can follow me there at Greg M. Parks. So we'll see if that follows into tomorrow night, where Vince McMahon will be on Raw to no doubt discuss the accusations that Seth Rollins put forth last week against Baron Corbin about the quality of Raw, and now that Baron Corbin is out as general manager-elect of Monday Night Raw, it's quite possible that Vince McMahon either reinstates Kurt Angle tomorrow night as GM or names a new GM of Raw. We'll have to wait and see. TLC tonight, we had the on the pre-show, Buddy Murphy defeating Cedric Alexander to retain the Cruiserweight Championship. And we also had a second match on the kickoff show, which was the match with the guitar on a pole, or guitar on the top of a ladder in this case, which was pitted Elias against Bobby Lashley. And Elias was the one to get the guitar. Bobby Lashley ended up using it on Elias. So that was the pre-show, two matches for the one-hour pre-show. And then we had TLC starting with the Mixed Match Challenge finale, Carmella and R-Truth against Jinder Mahal and Alicia Fox. The winners would enter number 30 in their respective Royal Rumbles next month, and they would also get a vacation out of this. Truth and Carmella picked up the win in a short match. It was, I don't want to say heavy on the comedy, because I think most Mixed Match Challenge matches are heavier on the comedy than this was. But it was short and it was inoffensive. And after the match, R-Truth announced that they would be taking a vacation to WWE headquarters in Stamford, Connecticut. So we can at least look forward to some entertaining skits, perhaps, from R-Truth and Carmella from WWE headquarters. At least I hope they're entertaining. With R-Truth, you can pretty much bet on it, especially with the streak he's been on lately. Match number two was The Bar against The New Day and The Usos in a WWE SmackDown Tag Team title match. This was a good match. It wasn't the show stealer that some may have predicted. The match on the show that people thought could be an underdog for match of the night, I didn't think it reached that level, but it was still good. Anytime you put any combination of these six guys in the ring, you're going to get a quality bout, and this was no exception. The Bar ended up picking up the victory and retaining the SmackDown tag titles. I made this point on Twitter during the show, and I think I made it even last week. It almost doesn't matter which one of these teams hold the titles, because these three teams are so head and shoulders above everybody else in the SmackDown tag division that no matter who was going to come out of this match as the champions, they were likely going to feud with one of the other two teams in this match. So it didn't really seem to matter who was going to be champions. They'd all probably end up wrestling each other following up anyway. Match number three was Braun Strowman versus Baron Corbin, and this was one of the more intriguing matches on the show, in part due to the injury to Braun Strowman, and people wondering what role, if any, would he play in this match. Baron Corbin had been talking for weeks about how Strowman wasn't going to be here, and it was going to be a slam dunk that Corbin would become permanent general manager, which was one of the stipulations set forth in this match. If Corbin won, he would become permanent GM. If Strowman won, Corbin would be stripped of his power, and Strowman would get a Universal Championship match against Brock Lesnar at the Royal Rumble. They did the count-out gimmick when Baron Corbin was introduced, and I think they got to about seven when Braun Strowman came out with his arm in a sling. And he was helped, because this was a TLC match, no disqualification. He was helped by a number of Raw talents that Baron Corbin had slighted in the previous weeks and months, and they helped Strowman get the victory. I don't think he did anything physical. He won by putting his foot on the chest of Baron Corbin. So Strowman will, as expected, face Brock Lesnar at the Royal Rumble. Corbin is out of power, which isn't a surprise with the shakeup of some sort expected tomorrow night with Vince McMahon's appearance. So this, you know, I thought this was a unique way around it, Braun Strowman not being able to wrestle. It was clear that he was not cleared to wrestle. And I know it was touch and go, and some people thought he may be able to be limited enough to do something in this match, but they didn't risk anything with him. And instead, I thought it was a nice out that WWE Creative created by having all the wrestlers on Raw who had been slighted by Corbin, or at least some of them, coming to Braun Strowman's aid to help rid Raw of Baron Corbin's control. Match number four was Natalya versus Ruby Riott. This was a real heated feud because of Ruby Riott's involvement or invoking the name of Natalya's deceased father, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, throughout this feud. I thought the match really sort of dragged. I liked Natalya pulling out the table with Ruby Riott's likeness on it, just like Ruby had done with Jim the Anvil Neidhart. I know it wasn't a one-to-one matchup. It didn't, you know, Neidhart has passed away. Ruby Riott obviously has not. So it wasn't an exact match for what they were doing, but I thought it worked well enough and it popped the crowd. I'm not someone who really enjoys, on the whole, when deceased family members make their way into storylines. It usually feels pretty icky, and I don't think this is really any exception, but what it did was that you could feel the crowd more invested in this match than if they threw out Natalya versus Ruby Riott with some other angle surrounding this match and this feud. So match was okay, but I thought it went on a little too long there. Drew McIntyre versus Finn Balor was match number five. Dolph Ziggler came out at one point and I guess distracted Drew McIntyre long enough. He hit a move on Drew, but Drew was able to take Ziggler out. But that was enough for Finn Balor to get the victory. So kind of interesting to see Balor get the win here. This was, for the most part, booked as a pretty feel-good show, and I don't know if that's in response to diving viewership numbers or the disdain that many fans have had for the product over the last few weeks, that Vince McMahon and WWE felt, hey, let's put the babyfaces over strong on this show. But this was a match that I thought McIntyre really should have won. This is also a match that you kind of feel like a rematch is in the offing sooner rather than later, perhaps as early as tomorrow night on Raw, where McIntyre could get his win back, and the result of this could be pretty irrelevant in 24 hours. Match number six was a chairs match between Randy Orton and Rey Mysterio. I thought this was a stronger match than I thought it was going to be going into the match. Orton and Mysterio always seem to work well together. This was no exception. The stipulation, sometimes it's difficult to work around a gimmick match like a chairs match or something of that nature, but I thought they did a really nice job here. Mysterio picking up the win, getting some revenge on Randy Orton. Next up was Ronda Rousey versus Nia Jax for the Raw Women's title. And I always get into this situation where, given Ronda's background and how WWE wants to push her and portray her, my first instinct is to be shouting at my laptop when I'm watching this, you know, after it goes for 2-3 minutes that, you know, this match should be over. Rousey should be dominant. She should get a really quick victory. And the longer the match goes, I come around to the idea of a longer Rousey match because she's just gotten so good at it. And you can say that, yeah, her matches are over-rehearsed or rehearsed period more so than anyone else's. But, you know, WWE has made no bones about, hey, this is a performance. And on any other stage and any other performance, you do rehearsals. So I don't necessarily hold that against her as much as maybe some would, especially the old school folks. But, you know, an entertaining match is an entertaining match, however you put it on and whatever goes on behind the scenes in order to create that product. So Rousey gets the win here, retains her Raw Women's Championship over Nia Jax, who was a formidable foe on this night for Rousey, and I thought it was a strong match there. Next was a match that I think we're going to be talking about a lot, if not tonight, then in the next 24 hours. That's Seth Rollins versus Dean Ambrose, and this was a match that the crowd just could not get behind, and I don't know what happened here. I really don't. The match, I didn't think it was all that good, and you could say that's a reason the crowd didn't get behind it, but these characters in this arc have really been one of the cornerstones of Monday Night Raw over the last several months, from the Shield split to Dean Ambrose turning heel to, you know, bringing out the name of Roman Reigns and things like that. So you would think that this would be a heated match from a fan perspective, that the fans would be really solidly behind Seth Rollins, who is Raw's de facto number one babyface now with Reigns out and with Braun Strowman having been out. And then Dean Ambrose, who's come across as a really strong heel. There's been no ambiguity with him. It's heel 100%. And the crowd just was not with it. And I don't know if the in-ring action didn't match the story they were telling outside of the ring. I don't know if Dean Ambrose's character and the turns that creative has taken with that over the last several weeks had hurt his momentum. I don't know if the fans were just ready by this point in the show for Becky Lynch, and it was a long show to this point, and they just, you know, weren't in the mood for it. There's a lot of what-ifs about this match, and I don't know that we'll ever get a real answer for what happened, but this was probably the biggest disappointment on the show by a country mile. In terms of match quality, in terms of fan reaction, just in terms of everything surrounding this, there were catcalls for the match, and I never would have expected that for a Seth Rollins-Dean Ambrose match. Dean Ambrose did end up winning the Intercontinental Championship. I did skip over a match somewhere here. Let me go back in my notes here. Yes, just before this one was Daniel Bryan versus AJ Styles for the WWE Championship. This was a really good match, as you would expect from these two. Daniel Bryan winning with a small package in about 25 minutes. It didn't feel that long, or maybe I should say you didn't really feel the minutes. They were able to fill it up, and you didn't feel like 25 minutes was too long for this match. So they did a really good job here, Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles. You know, I don't know what else really to say about it other than it was a really good match, and Daniel Bryan gets the victory. One of the interesting things Tuesday night on SmackDown will be to see if AJ Styles is still in the title picture, because if not, That would mark well over a year that he is not involved in some way in the WWE title picture, and SmackDown does not have a lot of top baby faces. So you got to wonder who's next man up on the SmackDown side. Is it a Rey Mysterio who picked up a big win against Randy Orton tonight? Is it somebody who moves from Raw? You know, does Vince McMahon shake the rosters up tomorrow night and move somebody from Raw to SmackDown that would challenge Daniel Bryan? Or does Styles stay in the mix? Does he get another title shot either on SmackDown, maybe at the Royal Rumble coming up? So that'll be something to watch.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The main event was the Triple Threat TLC match. Becky Lynch defending her SmackDown Women's title against Charlotte and Asuka. And here I was a few weeks ago thinking that Asuka was put into the match to kind of, you know, take the beating and you know, be somewhat of an out that one of them will have for losing the match, that it won't be a straight one-on-one match because they want to extend the Becky Lynch-Charlotte championship feud. And lo and behold, Asuka wins the SmackDown Women's Championship tonight with help from Ronda Rousey, who tipped over a ladder that Charlotte and Becky Lynch were both standing atop. And Asuka was able to climb a second ladder and get the title. Rousey had the menacing face on during this. So a lot of people are reading this as a heel turn. I'm not really that convinced that this was a heel turn for Ronda Rousey. I know that there's been a lot of speculation that Rousey, Becky Lynch will be at WrestleMania, could even main event WrestleMania, perhaps now a triple threat involving Charlotte. I don't think that would be too out of left field to do that. But I don't know if a Rousey heel turn is really what they were going for here. We'll have to see tomorrow night on Raw. 515-605-9345 is the number to call here to give your thoughts on WWE TLC, which just took place here on Sunday, December 16th. So excited to get to the calls as well as our emails. WNIALivecast@gmail.com. We've got some emails that we'll get to later on in the show. But first up, it is the 443 area code, 443. You are on Wrestling Night in America.
What's going on, Greg? This is Mark from Baltimore.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for calling. What'd you think of TLC tonight?
I thought it was pretty good, especially surprisingly good because of, like how you said earlier, how bad they've been these past couple of weeks. And I think they knew they had to kind of deliver on the match quality, you know, and forget the gimmicks and all that crazy stuff and really deliver. I can kind of agree with you to an extent on the Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins match. I liked it, but for whatever reason, it didn't have that certain flair to it. It just didn't jump out of there. And I even looked down at my phone for probably like 30 seconds and almost missed the pinfall, how he won it. And I had to see it on a replay like, oh, wow, that happened kind of fast, and, you know, out of nowhere. But, you know, it was kind of okay, I guess. It was okay.
did you have a – what did you think was the best match on the show tonight?
The main event.
Yeah.
Although Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles was pretty close. I mean, well, if not to be on no sexist type thing, but, you know, as far as the guys, then I would say that. But girls, then it was like three women's matches. But I think that was still the best match overall. Like, it had me entertained the whole time. And I was hoping and praying that Asuka would win it so that way this company can kind of end the year on a good note so they can right their wrongs. I really did not like this year when they had two people who won the Men's and Women's World Rumble end up not even winning either world title. Like, I just was it was dumbfounding me. I didn't like it at all. And I'm glad that they finally did that to her, especially after the hard year she had, making her a joke with Naomi and all that stuff. She's a top-notch athlete, probably better than every woman on their roster. And they have a really deep, steep roster. But, yeah, I'm glad Asuka finally got it, you know. And this was definitely one of their best pay-per-views this year. Probably fourth or fifth, and they probably had about 15 pay-per-views this year, or whatever you want to call them now, live events. But, yeah, I think it was pretty good.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Asuka and what's happened to her since WrestleMania, you know, losing to Charlotte. And I know a lot of fans have been frustrated with the booking of her. You know, I don't think this win came too out of nowhere, Mark. Like, I don't think that you can look at her and say, well, I don't think fans are going to take her seriously as a champion because of the way she's been booked. You know, fans were really behind her when she was announced as being part of this match, and I don't think she lost that fan support despite the relatively poor booking. So, you know, even with the way she's been booked over the last few months, I don't think it's to the point where fans won't take her seriously as champion.
I can agree with you because, I mean, I was one of those fans, you know, even though they had her looking silly, I still was rooting for her because I just was a fan of her from NXT. She was really, really good, you know, and that's pretty much all I got to say on the show. You know, Merry Christmas if you celebrate a Happy New Year. I guess I won't be listening to this show until the 13th. Not really a big Impact fan. No disrespect to the other guys because they do a good job. I hear them come on Wade's show a couple times and yours too, but I guess y'all see me the 13th.
All right, Mark, thanks for calling in, and you have a Merry Christmas as well.
Thanks.
Mark from Baltimore checking in with his thoughts on TLC tonight, giving it a thumbs up show, saying it's probably one of the best WWE pay-per-views of the year. So that's interesting. Again, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. 478 is next up. I believe this is Darrell from Georgia. Is it Darrell?
How you doing today, Greg? Yeah, this is Darrell from Georgia.
Awesome. Good to talk to you, Darrell. What did you think of TLC tonight?
A pretty good show. The main event really got me back into it. But
yeah,
good show overall.
The main event was strong. Some scary bumps, though, in that one.
yes, true. I think they really needed that type of main event. Really interested in see what they do with this Ronda Rousey, Becky and Charlotte thing. Are they going to have them two compete to see who's going to win the Rumble? And whoever wins get to face her, then the other person get to face Asuka. Really, really interested in seeing how that goes. One thing, though, is the energy of the crowd seemed kind of off the whole entire night. Where it came up really in that Seth and Dean match. I don't know how you thought about the energy of the crowd, but for some reason the energy of the crowd just was seemed off to me the whole night.
You know, I thought they were a pretty good crowd, all things considered, for most of the night. The only time I really noticed them having an off reaction was to Rollins versus Ambrose, and that was about as off of a reaction as you could get, certainly. But, you know, for the rest of the show, I thought they were pretty into it at times that I thought that a crowd should be into it. They got really hot towards some of the end of some of the matches. But I didn't really have a problem. I know John Mazzara, who was my guest on Wrestling Night in America last week, PWTorch.com contributor, was at the show. So I don't know if he's going to be able to call in tonight to give a live perspective. But if not, you can reach out to him on Twitter at John Mazzara. If anyone else has any questions like Darrell about the crowd, I'm sure he'd be happy to answer them for you. But I thought it was a pretty good crowd overall, aside from that Rollins-Ambrose match, which makes it all the more strange. You know, if this was a crowd that was off all night and then was off during Rollins and Ambrose, you could kind of write that off of, you know, it was just a fickle crowd or whatever, not to steal Daniel Bryan's word of the month. But the fact that I thought the crowd was into the show for the most part everywhere else but was so off for Rollins Ambrose, that's what makes it stick out even more.
Yeah, and I think they kind of died at the end of that AJ and Daniel match. I think because of that finish. If I can see one last small package of one finish that you see every week on Raw and SmackDown, I wish I could see that on pay-per-view shows or even any type of big show. I would just like some type of definite finish, like either somebody wins legitimately, you know, not with some, I know small packages are finished, but they do the small packages and the distraction finishes so much that on a pay-per-view, I feel like that's something that you shouldn't use. So I think that was another call that it was already kind of down. Then I guess how this feud been booked, people haven't really been into it that much, so that just really took them all the way out. But other than that, everything was pretty straight. With this finish with Asuka being the winner, what do you see they do with her, and who do you see as an opponent for her at Rumble, or do they even have the two main women champions wrestle at the Rumble?
Yeah, that's a good question. I know they didn't last year, so I would expect they probably wouldn't this year in order to get all the other women into the Royal Rumble match. But, you know, you bring up a good point about Asuka. Even though Asuka is now the champion, you've got to imagine that fans of SmackDown are still going to see Charlotte and Becky Lynch as the two top stars of the women's division of SmackDown. And you could even make the argument Becky Lynch, the top star of SmackDown, period. And Charlotte then would be probably in the top three or top five of that. So how they book Asuka as champion is going to be really interesting going forward. Do they even make any attempt to put her on the same playing field as Becky Lynch and Charlotte? Or do they just take that L and say, okay, we've got a champion, almost like a Jinder Mahal, you know, where Jinder was champion, but he wasn't really a major featured player all the time on SmackDown. They kind of hid him in the background sometimes. Are they going to do that with Asuka and just say, hey, our money is in Charlotte and Becky Lynch. The money is in them getting back into the title picture, not, you know, being in the title picture right now. So we've got to put the title on somebody else for a while we continue to really ride the Charlotte Becky Lynch wave. I think that's going to be something really interesting to watch over the next few weeks. And I don't really have an answer as to how that's going to work.
Yeah, I feel like whoever she's going to face at Mania, they shouldn't touch her, and whoever shouldn't touch until Mania. They have three pay-per-views before Mania coming up. They have the Rumble and the two pay-per-views in between WrestleMania. So I feel like you have three pay-per-views to build Asuka up until she feels to the fans like she's part of the three-headed circle with Becky and Charlotte on SmackDown. And also, since they had Becky backstage do something and the man was cashing receipts on people a la Nia Jax, do you see as that something that was their way to blow that off? Or maybe as a hint of something that they could do later on down the line, let's say if the man wins the Rumble and challenges Ronda Rousey, and just to have her hiccup in between the Mania and the Rumble in one of those two pay-per-views, have her face Nia Jax maybe for her her slot at Mania for winning the Rumble, a la something like New Japan do when they have the person win the when they have them win before they have the Tokyo Dome show.
Yeah, I it's really interesting. I think that for now, that was sort of the capper on the Becky Lynch Nia Jax deal. I think it's completely possible they revisit it in a segment in the Royal Rumble in January, which is just, you know, right around the corner now. So I think that's where you'll see it again. What's interesting to me is going to be what happens at WrestleMania and who's the champion. You know, we can assume Becky Lynch is going to win the Royal Rumble and want to face Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania. How does Charlotte get in that mix, if she does at all? You know, is will Becky and Charlotte, or Charlotte, I should say, be champion heading into WrestleMania? Or, you know, will Asuka be champion and she's off in a separate match? You know, there's still a lot to iron out. I think we got some answers tonight. But I think we got some more questions raised tonight as well, which, to be honest with you, is how you build an intriguing storyline and how you build an angle. And this is one that's going to be unfolding over the long term heading into WrestleMania, and I'm totally okay with that.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
Same here. I think all the interest right now is in SmackDown. Raw has a bunch of serious problems. They have no legitimate heels that legitimately get regular heat and not go away heat. And after your top babyface got booed tonight in a match, the whole match and everything, and then considered called boring, I think you have a lead babyface problem on Raw too. And now with them having Vince come, hopefully he don't come do the same Vince stick where he want to fire somebody, the same stuff he been doing the past 5 or 6 years when he made his comeback. Hopefully try something different. But they have some problems over there. They need to see who they're going to go with and start trying to build somebody up that gives people hope.
Yeah, I agree. I think hope is the big thing that fans need coming out of Raw tomorrow night. Hope that things will be different going forward. Hope that there is an admission by Vince or some sort that things have not been working and that he's going to change something about Raw, whether it's the presentation, whether, you know, something substantial enough to get fans to really believe that things are going to be different. And I don't know what WWE has planned, but that's the hope anyway, Darrell.
Yeah, and maybe he can speak on that, because I'm not a big fan of seeing Vince. I'm not one of the like fans who, you know, if you've been talking about how bad the show is and you start popping and happy to see Vince, then I think you're doing the wrong thing. You should let him know how you feel when he walk out there.
Yeah.
Because he's one of the reasons why. So also because, to me, him showing up doesn't even fit in the storyline or can even be used to further a story, because the last story I seen him in was a locked box, and he never spoke on or did anything about that locked box. So until he answered that and end that story that's still continuing for about 3 years now, I don't too much care what he has to say coming on Raw, because it doesn't mean too much, especially when you're the guy who's pushing the strings. And you might forget about what you said this week on Raw and continue with the same process that you continue to do week to week anyway. So I'm not one of those guys. I've seen enough of Vince in the early 90s and 2000s. So, and I just seen him give an announcement for the XFL. So he's not popping me.
Well, you're in the minority, I think, because the ratings have always trended toward trended upward when Vince has something to say, especially when WWE plugs it as a big announcement. So tomorrow night they're almost guaranteed to do a better rating than they've been doing the last few weeks with Vince on the show. Now it's up to WWE to make that worthwhile and to get those fans to stick around.
Yeah, that's true. Last thing would be, if they don't pop a rating, what does that say? And what signs do that point to? After the heavy pushing of Vince return, if they don't pop a rating, what does that mean? And I'm good. I'll be on listening to you the whole show.
All right, Darrell, thanks for calling in. If they don't pop, I can't imagine they don't pop a rating, because there's just going to be intrigue over what Vince has to say. He's always a draw. But for whatever reason, if they don't, then I think that tells you what fans they've run off and what fans aren't willing to come back for anymore. There's only so many times you can bring a McMahon back to pop a rating. We haven't really seen that train leave the station yet. But, you know, I think it'll tell you what kind of fans that have been eroded. And it's the hardcore longtime fans who stick around through thick and thin. If they don't come back for Vince McMahon, that may be those may be fans that you're going to have a lot more trouble bringing back than they even thought. So that's kind of my take on that situation. We'll have to find out tomorrow night. A lot could change tomorrow night with a simple Vince McMahon promo, as things tend to do. We go back to the phones. It's the 516 area code. 516, please state your name. Where are you calling from?
Greg, it's Frank from Farmingdale, New York, although tonight, Palm Beach, Florida. How are you?
Frank making his winter residence in Palm Beach, Florida. Nah, just a little million-dollar man there for you, but well, welcome to Florida. First of all, it's much better, I'm sure, weather-wise than Farmingdale, New York.
Oh my God, this morning was terrible. So we had to take the kids to church in the morning because my older daughter started religious ed, and from the parking lot to the church was not a fun experience. So yeah. Definitely much better pastors here, 110 miles from you in Naples, Florida.
Okay, yeah, that's a quick 2-hour drive on the freeway.
That's exactly what it was, because I was looking at it. I said, "Gee, I wonder how far Greg is from me," and I mapped it out, and it was exactly that. It was a 2-hour and 10-minute drive. So I said, "Yeah, Greg probably wouldn't want to meet me for TLC tonight. It'd be a little bit of an hard drive for you."
No. That's right. That's right. Plus, I'd have to get somebody else to host this show for me. So, you know, that's
yeah.
That would be tough.
I don't think you want to drag your equipment, you know, whatever you got, 2 hours across the Florida coast. So,
ain't that the truth?
But, I mean, overall, I'll give the show a thumbs up just because I didn't hate it. I didn't think it was the best that they put out this year, but it certainly wasn't the worst. You know, I think it picked up towards the end. I mean, I could have done without, you know, some things in the beginning. I could have done without the mixed match challenge, but thank God I was ordering food at the time, so I was well distracted during that.
Right.
I'm happy that R-Truth and Carmella will be traveling to Stamford, Connecticut, so good for them. But what I'll start out with is Asuka, and I've been talking to a couple of people on Twitter about this tonight. And it's funny, I was actually going to message you earlier to see what your prediction was, and my prediction was actually Asuka. I didn't want to say it because it felt so out of left field, but when they included her a few weeks ago, I just felt like she wasn't being included by accident. I felt like she was being put in to actually win the title, and sure as night follows day, here we are. The one issue I have with it, Greg, and I just want to get your take on it, is her winning with the outside interference by Ronda. I understand mechanically why they did it. You know, they have to further the narrative between Ronda and Charlotte and Becky and all of that stuff. But don't you think that this really doesn't do Asuka any favors? Asuka, the baby face anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having Ronda come out and interfere, and, you know, this is her first championship win. I mean, you look at her push throughout the year, you know, and then you and I have talked about it when I was a co-host, how much damage they've done to Asuka, you know, losing to Carmella with James Ellsworth and all of that stuff.
Right.
Don't you think that this win really doesn't do her any favors tonight, or am I just looking too much into it?
I think it's a simple sleight of hand by WWE that could get them out of this. That being, you know, I'm sure Becky Lynch will have a rematch clause against Asuka, but if Asuka moves away from Charlotte and Becky Lynch relatively quickly and she, you know, moves on to, I don't know, Peyton Royce or what other heels that would challenge for the title on SmackDown, and she goes one way and Charlotte and Becky Lynch go another way, either against each other or plotting against Ronda Rousey or what have you, I think that would distract fans enough from the finish to make Asuka a credible champion in their eyes. If the storyline is going to be for the next, you know, 2 months, Charlotte and Becky chasing Asuka and, you know, constantly bringing up on promos and reminding her that she only won because Ronda came out and helped her, then, yeah, I think that could hurt a little bit. That's not my sense going forward. That's what they're going to go with. But this is also an era in WWE where that kind of stuff happens all the time. And if we were in a different era where it happens so rarely, then I would agree with you that, yeah, it makes her look weak because Ronda had to help her win. But it just, you're almost desensitized to championships being won that way nowadays, that I don't really think that a lot of the fans are going to be able to separate that from any kind of legitimate win that she might have gotten.
Yeah, you know what it is? That's the problem. I'm too old school. I'm too stuck in the old way of doing things where if the babyface is going to be a champion, you want the babyface to win strong. If the heel is going to win, you can have the heel win strong, or you can have the heel win with outside interference. This is a woman who came up from NXT, you know, with all kinds of anticipation. And, you know, you would think that at some point when they did want to make her a champion, you would want to make her a champion strong. Now, I'm not necessarily upset. Like, I was having this discussion at WrestleMania, and I was talking to a good friend of mine who's really astute with the product. And he asked me, he said, if Charlotte wins, does this hurt Asuka? And I said, no, it doesn't. You know, and that's what happened. Obviously, Charlotte beat Asuka at WrestleMania. It didn't hurt. It didn't bother me. I don't care that her undefeated streak ended. I don't care that she didn't win the title. But then you have her lose to Carmella, and you use James Ellsworth with, you know, when he was dressed up as Asuka that time, that ridiculous angle. And then whatever they did the next time out, I don't know. And then they're having to do all these jobs, you know, match in and match out. And now she finally wins, but she wins with outside interference. And again, I get it. I get the mechanics of it. I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to keep the narrative between Ronda and Becky and Charlotte. But I don't know. I just look at Asuka, and I feel like she should be booked a lot stronger. You know, I feel like she should be booked a lot tougher. I mean, she looked good tonight. Don't get me wrong. I like how she looked in the match.
She stood tall on SmackDown. On Tuesday, too, leading into this match, which usually tells you that she wasn't going to win, and she ended up winning.
Well, you know, it's funny, though, because after Tuesday, I actually felt like she did. She was going to win. Yeah. And I held it. I was going to put it out. I was going to put it out there, and I held it. I'm like, nah, I don't want to put this prediction out, because then if I'm wrong, I look silly.
I'm wrong all the time, Frank. Don't worry about it. It's really not that bad, trust me.
Did you figure on the Jaguars being, what, 4-1? Did they win today, or I don't even know?
No, they did not. That was one of those. I can take solace in the fact that everybody was wrong about the Jaguars this year, though.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Yeah, it's funny. New York Sports, Mike Frances, I don't know when you were in New York, you listened to him, but he actually compared the Jaguars to the Giants. He said the Jaguars blew up their offensive line in the offseason, and everything completely went south. I was gonna message you with that, but I never got a chance to do so. But I thought it was interesting that he said that. But anyway, we'll see what happens here. I mean, listen, I'm above everything else, I'm happy that she's finally champ. I think she deserved it. I just wish that it wasn't under the circumstances, because I feel like it's more of a necessity than wanting to actually make her a champion, because now you have Ronda and Becky, who will probably be in the Royal Rumble at this point. And please, God, do not do the two of them hitting the arena at the same time. Okay. Please don't do that and have that lead to the triple threat. Can you actually see that happening? That's the first thing I thought about. As soon as Asuka won the title, I said, they're going to have Ronda and Becky both fall out, just like Rock and Big Show in 2000 and Luger and Hart in 94. They're going to do that, and then that's how they get to the triple threat. Can you actually see that?
I didn't think of that until you just said, when you said Charlotte and Becky Lynch will both be in the Royal Rumble, that was what just popped into my mind, and then you said it. So, yeah, you're really tempting fate by doing that. I think it would be a little too convenient to have these two women who have just happened to be feuding with Ronda Rousey also be the two that just happened to tie, you know, coming out of the Royal Rumble. I think that would be a too cute by half finish, as Wade Keller would say. So I think that if indeed they do a triple threat, and I don't know that that's going to be the case, I think that you got to get Charlotte in there some other way. I don't think the answer is to do a tie in the Rumble finish.
I really hope that's not my prediction. That's my fear, and I hope my fear isn't realized, because that would just be a cheap way to go. I actually don't even want to see the triple threat. I think it's better one-on-one. But, I mean, I don't see Charlotte and Asuka part two. I don't think Vince has the stones to just do Becky and Ronda. I think he wants Charlotte in the match too. So,
yeah, I think Becky and Ronda is strong enough to main event WrestleMania. I don't think it needs to have Charlotte in it. But given the story that they've told so far, from a storyline perspective, it would make sense to put her in it. And I don't think it would be completely out of place. I think it would still be a really strong match from a work rate perspective. I think it would be a really strong match from a storytelling perspective. That all being said, would I prefer Becky versus Ronda one-on-one? Sure. But I could understand now them putting Charlotte in there. I think there's enough there now as we're talking here in December, and a lot could change between now and March or April. But I can understand them putting Charlotte in that match if that's the direction they go.
Well, and also too, it's the three biggest women in the biggest, you know, match at the biggest women's match at WrestleMania, the first time they're having the women main event WrestleMania. You know, Ronda, Becky, and of course Charlotte. I mean, you know, say what you want about Charlotte, she's still a big star. She's a flair. So, you know, all that comes with that. But we'll have to see. Let me shift topics on you here. I got some other people to get to. But Drew McIntyre, okay? I don't know if you saw my tweet about this. I'm officially starting to worry about Drew a little bit, because this is the kind of stuff that we saw when he was in his first run in WWE. Now, we all know what happened. You know, he was the chosen one. Things didn't go as well. His push kind of fell by the wayside. He started losing, and then he was in 3MB, okay? Not to remind you of that crappy stable, but...
Too late.
I'm starting to worry about him. What's that?
I said too late. You just reminded me.
you know, so... And where was I? Oh, yeah. So... You know, he loses a couple of weeks ago to Ziggler. Granted, he gets his win back last week, but then he loses to Finn. And I know you talked about that at the onset of the show, that this is a match that you expected McIntyre to win, and I expected him to do so as well. I understand wanting to keep Finn strong because, listen, Finn has been through a lot since he's been back. He's been booked kind of 50-50, up and down, win some, lose some, you know, that kind of thing. But... And this is such a weird feud to do. Like, I didn't know. I picked Drew to win, but it wasn't strong because it's such a weird situation. You know, you don't want to have Finn lose, but you don't want to have Drew lose either. So just having Drew lose, even though they had the outside interference, it actually makes me wonder about Drew's push now, given how strong they made him look weeks ago, you know, and how it looked like he was on his way to being the strongest heel. Now he's jobbed, you know, two out of three matches, and two out of three big matches recently, I would think, anyway. So where are you with Drew's push right now?
I don't think I'm as worried as you. I would, again, when you look up and down tonight's show, you could almost just chalk this up to, okay, Vince wanted to put over the baby faces tonight because the product has been so bad lately that he wants to give fans kind of a positive boost heading into Raw tomorrow night. It could be something as simple as that. And this was a match that really could have gone either way. But you know, to me, Drew hasn't done anything to, and you don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but he hasn't done anything to jeopardize his push that he had been getting. So I would expect long term him to be okay. And it could be a situation where they announce a shakeup tomorrow night and he ends up getting moved to SmackDown. And maybe that's why he's losing on Raw, lost on Raw and then lost at the pay-per-view tonight. That could be an excuse. But, yeah, I would wait another couple of weeks to see where he is there, especially if this Dolph Ziggler feud is going to continue, which it looks like based on tonight. That's a feud I can't see McIntyre losing. So if he ends up on the losing end of a Ziggler feud, then maybe it's time to really show some concern.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. I just want to see Drew succeed this time out. Aaron and I were big Drew fans back in the day. That's actually when she started watching. She started watching about the time that Drew showed up.
Okay.
Back in 2009. And so it was interesting. That's when she got into it, and we were both fans. But I kind of see why things went by the wayside. So maybe I'm just a little more concerned than I should be. But just given what happened before, that kind of puts me in that place. By the way, they announced Finn versus Dolph Ziggler for tomorrow night. They announced that a couple of segments after they had the brawl in the back. It's going to be Finn versus Ziggler, which is interesting because Ziggler, but I don't know if he actually turned. It was more Drew getting rid of Finn, and then, Ziggler came and he was looking for appreciation from Finn, and Finn said, no thanks, I didn't need you, blah, 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 and then they went at it. So they're actually going to go at it tomorrow night. I just wonder if Drew is going to work.
And look at this.
There, like you said.
Frank not only previewing Raw in audio form here, but you can check out his Raw primer tomorrow night where he will get you primed and ready for Monday Night Raw at pwtorch.com. How's that?
Thank you for the plug, Greg. I appreciate that. I actually worked on most of it today. And it's funny, as soon as they announced that, I says, perfect, because I got an early show tomorrow. I'm heading up to Newark. So I'm like, oh, great, they announced another segment. Boom, and I just cut that paragraph. I got the Vince McMahon done one already. So I've been decemailing it. So all I got to do is a couple of sections tomorrow. But real quick, I'll cut to my last comment. I'll let you get to some other people. The Seth and the Dean stuff, for me, and this is just my opinion, I think because of the way they frame the feud, I personally haven't been into it, okay? Mm-hmm. Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose breaking up should be a huge deal, okay? This is the Shield, one of the most popular factions recently, da-da-da-da-da. Dean turning on Seth I didn't like it the night that it happened, but I came around on it because I understood what they were doing. Fine, okay? But then the premise of the feud has been Dean healing on the crowd. You all smell. I'm going to get sick from you. Da-da-da-da-da. This and that. Coming out with the mask and the sirens and stuff like that. It's completely gotten away from the major issue, which is Dean, having issues with Seth, having issues with Roman, or not necessarily Roman, but having issues being in the Shield, and it's become a bad comedy skit. Do I need to see Dean getting a distemper shot? That's what I get for my dog. I'm sure you get that for your dog as well, okay? I mean, it's not funny. It doesn't make me laugh. I don't get a kick out of it. This isn't the Muppet Show, okay? Then the stuff where he came out with the mask a few weeks ago, and then I think last week was a little bit better when he talked about some of the issues, but it just really hasn't had the foundation that it should. Not like when, Orndorff turned on Hogan years ago or Savage turned on Hogan, where it was, heated issues between the two of them and stuff like that. It just feels like more of a joke, and I don't think the people were as invested in the match going in as they should, because I don't necessarily feel like it was a terrible match. I think it was okay, but I think it was just the characters and the premise going in. What do you think about that?
That's been one of my main complaints about the build to Seth versus Dean has been Ambrose's character and what they've done with him. And I'm not really sure what they're going for, to be honest. With it, you know, as you said, this guy who is healing on the fans, he's become basically a germaphobe. And, you know, it's a turn that I don't really understand from a creative point of view. Like, I don't understand why WWE is pushing him in this direction. But mm-hmm. I think it was just hard for fans to relate to that. I think if they'd have kept it about more about the Shield and more about the breakup and more about their history, then it would have worked better. And, you know, this was supposed to be a real blood feud, and I don't think it was wrestled that way. And I think there was too much wrestling and not enough, like, brawling and not enough heat between these two guys from bell to bell tonight. And I think that's part of what was missing. And if you were watching it on pay-per-view, the commentary did not help, because I don't really know what they were trying to do with the Renee Young, Corey Graves banter back and forth. I thought that hurt more than it helped. But, you know, Renee is in an awkward position. She's kind of out there, and you have to ask her about it because she's married to Dean Ambrose, and that is canon now. But she's got to give these non-answers because Dean is supposed to be this kind of mystery, and, you know, they're allowing Dean and Seth to tell the story, which they should, and they're not relying on Renee to really advance much of that story. So it's kind of put them in a tough spot by acknowledging that they're married, but not letting her play a real role in this storyline. So it was all from basically all directions a jumbled mess tonight, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the Renee stuff is actually annoying, to be quite honest with you. I was actually chatting with Michael Moore about it a little bit, and I said, I wonder if they put Renee on commentary recently because they knew they were doing the Dean turn, and they thought that might add a little spice to it. And he goes, I don't think Vince thinks that far ahead. I go, there I go, making sense. What am I thinking? Let me go in my corner and color over here. You know? the commentary was more, you know, you started watching about the early 90s, right? So
yeah.
Michaels turning on Jannetty was probably the first major heel turn. How did that heel turn make you feel? And how did the dialogue after that make you feel? There was a lot of gravitas to that. Okay.
Yeah, I remember when the turn happened and when Michaels put Jannetty through the barbershop window. They would replay it on the weekend shows and everything. And I would like leave the room because I thought they were going to show Jannetty's face with all bloody and with the glass in it. And I just like I would turn away when they would. Right after that, because I didn't want to see it. I thought that was kind of gross to me at that age. I wasn't enthralled with blood and gore at that time. So, but yeah, I mean, that kind of memory stays with you, certainly.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Well, I'll give you a better turn because I think Jannetty had issues and they didn't do a match for like a year, so that kind of went over like a fart in church, but Diesel and Shawn Michaels in 96, when Diesel turned on Shawn Michaels, they had a match at, I think it was an In Your House after WrestleMania when Michaels beat Hart for the title. And then, I think it was Michaels versus Diesel at like In Your House or something like that. And that was after their turn. I think Diesel turned on Shawn Michaels at like a house show or something like that. And you felt the feud between the two of them. When Michaels came out, he didn't play to the crowd. He didn't do his posing or anything like that. He put up like a Jimmy Superfly, like, you know, I love you and stuff like that, walked right in, and there was a brawl right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And they just went at it and at it and at it. And the point of me bringing that up is Seth and Dean should have that gravitas. It should have that fire between the two of them. And like you said, it was just a pure wrestling match, which is fine in and of itself, but doesn't fit the storyline between these two. This is one of the most beloved factions of the last, you know, 10 years now. I mean, yeah, these guys go back to 2012. Their debut was in 2012 at TLC. And there should have been so much more to that, and it wasn't. And that's why I think the crowd was disengaged from this match.
Yeah, I mean, throw that theory onto the pile, because I think there's a lot. Usually when something like this happens, there's not one singular reason why something flopped. Usually it is a lot of different pieces conspiring to make this thing occur. And this thing tonight that occurred was, like you said, Rollins and Ambrose like a fart in church. And it just did not get over like you would have expected. So I think that's part of it. That, you know, that turn by Ambrose was treated as such a big deal. And now here we are, it's like the second or third from the top and almost an afterthought on this show behind Bryan Styles, behind Rousey's match, behind, you know, the SmackDown Women's TLC match. And it, I think it, upon reflection, it just goes to show how far this feud has fallen from Dean's initial turn and everything that happened in the weeks after that to where it is now.
Exactly. And without a Universal Champion on TV and with no purpose, with everybody not having a purpose to fight for the top title, you would think that this would be a major story, and it's not. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah, the Ronda stuff has been up there. But listen, Greg, get some other people in. It was great to talk to you tonight, and safe travels up to New York. Enjoy your time with your family, and we'll talk during the holidays, and I'll look forward to work with you again at some point.
Absolutely, Frank. Good talking to you tonight.
Sorry we couldn't make it work the last time, but that I had to work that night, and that was the one night I said, oh, boy. When you asked me, I said, oh, man, this is the night I want to talk.
Yeah.
I'm sorry it didn't work out, but
no problem.
I look forward to it again the next time.
Yeah, we'll definitely have you on again, Frank. Thanks for calling in.
Appreciate it. Have a good one.
So, Frank, you can catch his Raw and SmackDown primers on pwtorch.com. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. We've got 111 up next. Then we've got 313 on deck. Then the lines are free. Remember, if you're calling in and you want to talk, make sure you press 1 on your keypad. If you want to just call in and listen, hey, that's okay too. So we go to the 111 area code. This could be a Skype call. 111, hello. Please state your name and where you're calling from. Oh, we put someone to sleep. Hello? Literal snoring. Wow, that's a new one. So I guess we'll go to the 313 area code. 313, you're on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name, where you're calling from.
My name's Hendrick in Portland. I'm seriously laughing because of that snoring. So,
well, thanks for being awake for us tonight when I put you on air. Appreciate that.
So, yeah, well, here I am. I'm still alive here, but this is, I don't know, where do you think Baron Corbin comes from here? the everyone wants to know, where does Baron Corbin go?
Yeah, that's the number one talking point coming out of tonight, right? What happens with Baron Corbin? He lost to Braun Strowman tonight. He's no longer general manager, no longer general manager elect, no longer interim general manager, whatever you want to call him. He now has no power on Monday Night Raw. Who knows? Vince McMahon could come out tomorrow night and reinstate him as general manager of Raw. I highly doubt that's going to happen. So I guess Baron Corbin just becomes another member of the Raw roster, and he has to wrestle in tights instead of a dress shirt like everybody else. I don't know. You know, I think that the nice thing for Corbin is we saw tonight how many wrestlers he has alienated with his you know, storyline booking of Raw. So it makes it really easy to find a feud or two or three for him immediately after he's being removed as Raw GM. And I think telling that story where usually we have GMs who are not active wrestlers, first of all. Second of all, when a GM is usually replaced, they go away for a long time. They don't go back on the, you know, talent roster or whatever like that Baron Corbin's going to do. So this could be a little different of a story for WWE to tell, and I think there are some interesting ways to tell it. Ultimately, it's still Baron Corbin, and your interest in him may vary. So that it might be tough to get fans to come around on a Baron Corbin storyline at this point because he has been featured so much on TV, and he's been so associated with bad episodes of Raw and poor ratings, so you probably don't want to put him front and center in those feuds. But as a secondary or third-tier feud on Raw, I think there's some interesting stories to be cultivated from that.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, I definitely think, I mean, whatever he's been doing has totally, like, elevated his character, whether it's been good or bad for the company is probably more on the bad side, but I mean, you're spending so much time in this guy. I mean, hopefully he doesn't just have a pre-show match against Heath Slater at the next pay-per-view or something.
I think a match with Heath Slater is entirely possible, but I think it'll probably be on an episode of Raw.
All right. Well, at least I didn't fall asleep.
That's true.
God bless you.
I appreciate that.
So Asuka.
Yeah.
How long is she going to hold that title?
Man, that's a good question. And we've kind of mapped out in various other calls, you know, what things could look like heading into WrestleMania with Charlotte and Becky Lynch possibly being in the Women's Royal Rumble. If you take it from there, Asuka's unlikely to have a title match at the Royal Rumble, so she's clear there. There are two pay-per-views between Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, but if, you know, does Charlotte or Becky Lynch win the Royal Rumble? They want to face Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania. Okay, let's say Becky wins the Rumble, and then does Charlotte then go into a feud with Asuka? And, you know, does Charlotte end up facing Asuka again at WrestleMania? Does Charlotte somehow get into the triple threat with Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch? Does Charlotte somehow get in there as champion, SmackDown champion, where Ronda Rousey is Raw champion and Becky Lynch isn't champion? Do they make a story out of that? So I think Asuka makes it at least to February as champion. But whichever one, Becky Lynch or Charlotte, whichever one doesn't win the Royal Rumble, I think it's possible they could face Asuka in those two pay-per-views that happen between the Rumble and WrestleMania. And that's where you get a little bit of a gray area with Asuka. Does she lose the title there? I could see her going into, you know, if they do Charlotte and Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania and none of them are SmackDown champion, then who does Asuka face at WrestleMania? I think that opens up a very big spot on SmackDown for a heel, whether it's Sonya Deville or Mandy Rose at that point. I think both of them are possibilities to face Asuka at WrestleMania for the SmackDown Women's title. So, I think that I would prefer that to be the case, where Asuka's champion heading into WrestleMania. They've built up a secondary heel like a Mandy Rose or a Sonya Deville to challenge Asuka at WrestleMania, and then, you know, they've got that momentum, and then you've got Charlotte and Becky Lynch against Ronda Rousey in a triple threat match. I think that might be the best situation from a SmackDown Women's Division point of view to make as many women seem relevant and seem top tier, I think, at WrestleMania. But yeah, I think she at least makes it to February as champion, but after that, I could go either way.
I really hope she has it till WrestleMania, at least.
Yeah. I think that would make up for a lot of the weak booking of her this year, too.
Yeah, totally.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling-related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality-hosted podcasts.
That's all I have to say. Good night.
All right.
Good luck.
Thank you very much for calling in. Appreciate it. And if you want to call in, again, the number is 515-605-9345 to talk WWE TLC here tonight, December 16th, 2018. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. If you are a recent caller, again, our phone lines are open. So if you've got something you'd like to share with us, go ahead and call in. If you'd like to share via email or in the future would like to share via email, it's wnialivecast@gmail.com. If you have any comments about anything going forward, we will go to an email question right now. This is from our friend JB. He says, "Hi, Greg. This is JB from Detroit. Recently, we've had quite a bit of brand crossover between NXT/205 Live. With Raw and SmackDown. Daniel Bryan wrestled Mustafa Ali on SmackDown this week. Ricochet wrestled Tyler Breeze on the main event of NXT. Drake Maverick, Lio Rush, Lucha House Party have a presence on Raw. Cruiserweight title has also been defended on the last few pay-per-views and super shows." Of course, it was on the back to the pre-show as it had been for a long time tonight. JB says, "Do you see this crossover helping to tell stories on live TV as we head towards the new Fox deal next October? And how prominently might they be featured on second-tier pay-per-views like TLC? As always, love the show." Thanks, JB, for the email. It's interesting that how WWE has done this, because they've done it very slowly, almost like dipping their toe in the water of how they're using these guys differently. Tyler Breeze on NXT, Lucha House Party on Raw. It doesn't feel like they're using the Lucha House Party or Mustafa Ali in order to reach out to the viewers of those shows and try to grab them and get them to want to watch 205 Live. It doesn't feel like that. It feels like they're genuinely using these guys on these brands for a different purpose. Maybe Lucha House Party because they add something to Raw that wasn't previously there, whether it's that fun go-getter aspect of the show that, you know, with No Way Jose not being on TV for a long time, he was brought up to bring that positivity and that upbeat feel to Raw, and he hasn't been on there, so that seems like they're now doing that with the Lucha House Party, and maybe to help strengthen the Raw tag team division that they've been put on there. I think that's a good idea, because I hate to see guys like Gran Metalik and Lindsay Dorado and Kalisto wallowing in 205 Live. I think they deserve more. So it's nice to see them on Raw. Obviously, Mustafa Ali, that went over very well with the fan base as far as using him on SmackDown against Daniel Bryan this week. I don't see these guys en masse being moved to Raw and SmackDown, because Raw and SmackDown rosters are already pretty full. There are a lot of guys that aren't used on TV each week, so I think sprinkling these guys in for special appearances, as long as you don't treat them as jobbers. You know, Mustafa Ali had a great segment with Daniel Bryan this past week on SmackDown. He was treated not necessarily as Daniel Bryan's equal, but it wasn't like Daniel Bryan was making a joke of Ali and just ran through him in the match. Ali was treated very well, and I think he'll be able to use that on 205 Live going forward. So that's an aspect that I think creatively gives them a little more leeway. I think they are able to be a little more creative when they can dip into the reserves, so to speak, from 205 Live and pull guys here and there when the story necessitates it, as opposed to, you know, Daniel Bryan versus Ty Dillinger in that same situation just wouldn't have had the same appeal. It wouldn't have had the same oomph behind it. But taking Mustafa Ali, who has a great story, they cut a great promo, That felt different, and it felt new, and it felt good, to be honest, to see him get that opportunity. So that's kind of my take from there. I don't know that it has anything to do with the Fox deal. That is so far away from a creative standpoint. I don't think WWE is looking to that. And you know, the discussion on Twitter that happened this past week with a lot of WWE writers when fans were criticizing the product and some of the writers coming to the defense of the process and WWE, you could read those tweets saying, you know, they look to the next week and that's it. They have so much television to produce, so much content to produce. They can't look right now, at least the creative members. Maybe Vince McMahon does. Maybe he has a big vision that he's pushing these guys towards. But from a you know, the guys who are down and dirty in the pits doing the dirty work of creative, they're not looking necessarily to October and to that Fox deal and saying in November, 11 months away, or December, 10 months away, how can we start building our creative toward that? I don't think that's what's going on here. Now, the NXT situation is a little different. Tyler Breeze facing Ricochet on NXT TV this past week, and Tyler Breeze just doing more in that match than he has done in any match almost since he's been on the main roster, or at least over the last year or two as part of his tag team with Fandango. It just speaks to how different NXT and WWE are, not only from a creative standpoint, but really they're just two different animals. And we've heard Triple H on conference call after conference call say, yeah, I want NXT to be a place where we're developing guys, where we're taking guys from the indies, but where we're also bringing guys from WWE who maybe aren't doing anything right now and giving them a second life on NXT, or allowing them to continue to wrestle and stay active in NXT. I don't know what Triple H's vision for that looks like, because we just haven't seen it really in action. But Tyler Breeze coming down and being treated as a star, sometimes it's good for the fans to see someone at this level and say, man, Tyler Breeze looked really good on NXT. I can't wait to see him return to the main roster and maybe carry that some of that momentum. But you got to also figure it's good for the morale of the guys. When you're wrestling on main events every week, or when you're only doing house shows, which Tyler Breeze is doing because Fandango's hurt, it's got to do wonders for your morale to go down in NXT, to be treated as a star, to be able to really let loose in a match against a wrestler the caliber of Ricochet. So, you know, for these guys who are coming down to NXT, like a Tyler Breeze, I'm sure not only it does something for the fans, but it does something for the wrestler themselves. And maybe once they go back to the main roster, they've got a little bit of confidence. They've got a little momentum from that point of view. So, they're two different things, guys going to NXT versus guys moving up from 205 Live to Raw and SmackDown. But we'll see. It's something that's relatively new. So we'll see if that continues, that they continue to use guys here and there, or if it's just these special occasions that we're talking about. We go back to the phones now with the 302 area code. 302, you're on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from. Nope, 302 dropped. Got cold feet, I guess. Put them on the air, and they said no thanks. So if you'd like to call in, the number is 515-605-9345. Just press 1 on your keypad. We have the phone lines open. Do I dare go back to the 111 area code Skype caller? You are on the air. Still napping. Oh, well. See, the key is, if you want to talk, hopefully you stay awake, so when I come to you, you're ready to go. I know it's late on the East Coast. I'm sitting here at 12:18 in the morning. I'm awake, I guess. So remember, if you don't want to talk, don't press 1, because then that's what will happen. I'll come to you, and you'll be napping. 302 is back in my queue. 302, you want please state your name and where you're calling from. No, 302 dropped off again. Wow, 302 really does not want to talk to me. I got to stop going to 302. or they've got to stop pressing 1 when they call in, one or the other. Just a reminder, I touched on this at the start of the show, but if you're a frequent listener to Wrestling Night in America, maybe you joined us a little late tonight. But for the next 2 weeks, I will be off. of Wrestling Night in America. I'm traveling up north to visit family over the holidays. There will be a show of some sort at our usual time of 8 p.m. Eastern, whether it's a review, year in review with some guest hosts, that may be the case. And you can follow me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. As soon as I know what the situation is, you'll know. I'll make sure to tweet that out. But that's the schedule for the next 2 weeks. I'll still have my column, full-page column in the Torch newsletter over that time, however. So if you are a reader of the newsletter, hard copy or online copy, I will still have my my usual full-page column in those editions of the Torch newsletter. You can also follow me at Greg M. Parks on Twitter for my thoughts of Raw and SmackDown as they are on the air. And then January 6th, either I will be back or we'll have Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek, who are the Impact live cast recappers on Thursday nights. January 6th is Impact Wrestling's homecoming pay-per-view. So either I will be hosting a post-homecoming show or Mike and Andrew will be on the air. And then we'll be back regular time, 8 p.m. Eastern, with me on January 13th, back in the saddle for Wrestling Night in America, as you see it here on PWTorchLiveCast.com. Just checking my email one more time to see if anyone has any more thoughts on TLC. Doesn't look like it. Let's check Twitter. See if anyone has anything to say. Guess not. So, someone tweeted me, they think Craig is the one that fell asleep at the 111 area code. Usually that's Boris who calls in and falls asleep. So if it's Craig, I'm very disappointed in Craig. If that's the case, because he's usually one who can stay up and talk about pay-per-views, but I guess not tonight. It's late. It was a long show. I understand, but that will probably do it for me then. All right. It's great talking to everybody as usual. Thank you for those who called in. Thank you for those who are listening either live or on demand later in the week. Again, we're going to take a bit of a break here in the next few weeks, but I'll be back January 13th at the very latest, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.